that introduction. I assure you, you won't have to stand up because I prepared a 5-minute talk, which maybe was a mistake. But anyway, I'll try and respect everybody's time with being the final presenter and by noon. Okay, so I know that I probably lost a lot of you at Compost Tea. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with this, actually, before I jump in here, is the way to see my notes? Is there a presenter view on here?
I don't know.
All right, we're just going to wing it. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with compost tea, it's essentially an aqueous extract of compost or vermicompost. It's been shown to possess many of the similar microbiological and chemical properties as solid composts. To produce it, as you can kind of see in this figure, a little do-it-yourself method, just take compost, put it in some sort of porous bag or basket, and immerse that in water to extract the compost. An aquarium pump or some way to actively aerate the water is a common sort of do-it-yourself, or aquarium pumps are a do-it-yourself sort of method, although compost tea can certainly be produced without active aeration. Doing so sort of strips microbes and nutrients and these particulate organic substances into the solution, which can then be applied as either a foliar spray or as a soil drench or both. And that's it. Okay, so I know what I was going to say. This is much harder without my notes up here. Forgive me. A lot of the research to date has been interested in looking at compost tea for its effects on pathogen suppression. It's been shown to be very effective at suppressing particular plant diseases, such as powdery mildew in vineyard systems, but not a lot of work has actually been done to investigate its effects on plant growth. So I kind of looked at compost tea from the effects, or from the perspective as a fertilizer. My experiment is a 5x2x2 incomplete factorial design. So I have two different soil types. I've got 5 different fertilizers, and of those 5 fertilizers, 3 of them are organic amendments in which I also sterilized them and looked at looking at the effect of the microbial contribution to plant growth. So I removed the microbes through sterilization. The most prominent finding of my experiment was that the high organic matter soil, that red soil, produced significantly more biomass in every comparison, every fertilizer comparison. My two soils were collected from neighboring farms, from avocado orchards, which were mapped as the same soil series and differed primarily only in the organic matter content and sort of that initial soil fertility, but they were otherwise very, very similar soils. I was interested in sort of looking at the impact of past management or management history on soils. And that turned out to be a very significant effect. To parse out the differences between the treatments, the only treatment that actually produced more biomass, more lettuce yield, than the control in both soils was this combination of compost and vermicompost tea together. I also employed a 15N nitrogen isotope to investigate fertilizer and recovery. My legend, unfortunately, didn't make it on here. So the brown bars are indicating the initial fertilizer N that was taken up by microbes or otherwise retained in the soil. The green bars represent that fertilizer N that was taken up by plants. And the white bars are essentially not recovered. A lot of that representing just volatilization of that nitrogen. Generally speaking, the trend is pretty clear that there's not a lot of differences between the individual fertilizer treatments in that red soil, that high organic matter soil, but that more differences come out in the low organic matter soil. So much more of that fertilizer N was taken up by the plants in the high organic matter soil. And I attribute that again to just sort of differences in that initial soil fertility between the two. There was elevated inorganic N in that red soil relative to the blue. And I think that sort of gave that lack of nitrogen, gave that the microbes sort of a competitive advantage in a low fertility system. I'm going to sort of give every statistician in the room, a coronary, by trying to extrapolate the results of my tiny little greenhouse study to frame it in a broader agricultural context. So bear with me. You remember I mentioned that compost teas can be applied either as a foliar application or as a soil drench. Well, I tested both of those methods, both those application methods, and didn't see any difference in terms of compost tea as a fertilizer, but there may still be value in foliar applications for the benefit of pathogen suppression. And importantly, compost teas show promise and utility in a diversity of agricultural contexts. They are loaded with microorganisms and micronutrients and these humic substances that can be so critical in helping farmers establish soil fertility. That blue low organic matter soil was collected from a farm that only very recently received organic certification, and they were still feeling the woes of that transition. And I think that compost teas have the potential to really help establish sustained soil fertility and soil health in these farms that either are dealing with low fertility soils or might be undergoing that transition. And that is it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time. Are there any questions?
We have a very good 7 minutes for questions, interaction, comments, suggestions. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's been shown in a lot of other studies that use sterilization techniques that when you will sterilize either a liquid amendment like compost tea or compost, doing so lyses open the bacterial and fungi cells and just essentially release a lot of nutrients. And also by eliminating the microbes, you're eliminating some of that compost. So you're not only making those nutrients more available to the plants, you're also reducing competition. And you're right, the greatest biomass production was in these sterilized amendments. Absolutely. No, you're right. On my poster, I've actually got a whole table of different sort of steps in that process and decisions that represent or sort of manifest themselves in very, very different teas. So you're right. Everything from the feedstock that you use to produce the compost, the age or the maturity of the compost, the duration of the brew. I did a 24-hour brew. The temperature, the dissolved oxygen content, aeration versus non-aerated compost tea can be one of the biggest differences in both the microbial community that's produced as well as some of the compounds that are actually solubilized into the solution. So I'm not too familiar, or rather there's not a lot of work that has been done to actually understand what's in compost tea and how do these different production methods result in different brews. But there is a really good review out of Oregon State in the early 2000s that did discuss all of these different production methods that do lead to very different brews. Yeah.
Any more questions? Comments?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that one. I can't really explain that one,
yeah,
to be honest.
Right.
I think there was an error. Maybe I added too much of the nitrogen isotope initially and ended up recovering more of that. It may be related to some sort of mineralization that occurred and just more N was available to the plants, but I just, after poring over the calculations, I just can't figure out where it came from. I had 4 reps, and all 4 of the reps had something like 80% of the fertilizer N taken up by the plants and about 20 to 30% taken up by the soil. So I wish I could explain it, but there was consistency across the reps. So I'm not sure. Okay. Thank you. Oh, please.
Just a thought on that. I mean, is it possible that was stimulating some kind of
I think it's possible. Compost tea from the perspective of a fertilizer is very dilute. If you were to give it sort of an MPK number, it would be less than one on all of those. But I do think that its contribution to just supplying nutrients to the microbial community and in turn to the plants, I do think that that sort of stimulatory effect is certainly a possibility. The way that I calculated this was actually using the isotope, and so I shouldn't be accounting for any additional N taken up by the, or N mineralized. But I do think that it certainly has that effect. How I labeled it with the isotope?
Yeah,
how you labeled those? Yeah, so what I did was in setting up the pots, I took, you know, each of them either received an initial watering with DI water or with compost tea, and I took that known amount of 15N potassium nitrate and labeled 2% of the initial inorganic N pool. So I did some preliminary lab work to understand how much ammonium and nitrate I had in each of the soil types in the compost, in compost tea, and of course I knew in the inorganic potassium nitrate fertilizer how much N I had in there. I calculated what is 2% of that and added that enrichment. So I added it as a pulse label to the whole soil profile in that initial watering. And then was able to sort of track that throughout. And at harvest, I know how much of that N was taken up by the plant, how much was immobilized in the soil, and how much was not accounted for. Did that answer your question?
I guess so. All treatments receive potassium nitrate, only potassium nitrate.
Yeah, there was, to be clear, there was both the potassium nitrate, just fertilizer as a comparison, but my 15N was also a labeled 99% highly enriched potassium nitrate label as well. Okay, thank you so much.